I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to race and I love to finish well. But when I think about running and what it does for me, it really nourishes me in so many levels that aren't just about the end result.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for being here with me today for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by Runners Connect. So last week was our 100th episode, and I talked to the founder of Runners Connect, Jeff Gaudet. Most of you agreed that this was a really enjoyable episode, and learning about the background behind Runners Connect and just how much Jeff cares about how helping people run fast was actually really insightful. I thought it was about time we had another ultra runner back on the show, but I decided to take it one step further and find an ultra runner with a serious knowledge on the topic of nutrition, as I know many of you are interested in this. So I ended up emailing Lauren Fleshman and asking her opinion, and she pointed me towards my guest today. So her name is Stephanie Howe, and she has a PhD in nutrition and has used running as the focus for her research over the years. Isn't it awesome when our worlds can interlink like that? She has many published papers and has presented many times over the years about nutrition and how to fuel for runners. As for her athletic ability, she won Western States in 2014. She was also the Lake Sonoma runner-up, and she is a course record holder in multiple ultra events, which is pretty impressive. But before we meet Stephanie, let's just hear from our sponsor. Multiple studies have proven running with music helps to improve performance. I have become addicted to my Jabra Pulse Sport headphones, using them for almost every easy run, but shh, don't tell my coach. You will love these earbuds too, and you can enter to win a free set every month by visiting jabra.com/runnersconnect. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to learn more here, and I didn't actually know you before this podcast, or well, I guess I wasn't the initial one to come across you, but Lauren Fleshman was actually the original one that recommended me to you, and since then I've done quite a lot of research on you, which has been really fun, and we're going to go into that a bit more today. And I listed some of your accomplishments in the intro, but can you kind of give us a bit of background behind you and how your running kind of began? I know you started off as a Nordic skier, so do you want to kind of take us how that transitioned into running?
Yeah, I actually hated running growing up. It's kind of funny now. I was really good at it, but I didn't love it. I wanted to do team sports with my friends. So I kind of found that endurance sports suited me better. And I found Nordic skiing when I was like a junior in high school. And I had a lot of success with that. I went to college to Nordic ski, and I just loved it. It was such a cool sport to me. It wasn't maybe something I was naturally like that great at. I had to work really hard to be a skier, but it was a great way to go to school and to do a sport. And after college, I started a graduate program at Montana State. And in grad school, you don't have a ton of free time.
No.
So skiing takes a lot longer, just in terms of like traveling to the trail and like getting your skis ready. And so I didn't have a lot of free time. So I started running a little bit more. And I'd always run for training, just being an endurance athlete. But I started to really enjoy it. Like Bozeman had some beautiful trails, and I did a couple trail races, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And I think we're drawn to things that we're successful at, and I found some success in running, and it was just kind of a natural, organic progression from me changing over my primary sport from Nordic skiing to running. And it wasn't really until I moved to Oregon in 2009 that I really just focused on, actually it was probably 2010. I just started focusing on running. I just fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. So with you said about, you know, it's kind of different. What did you notice when you transitioned from Nordic skiing to the running world, just with the like culture? And I'm guessing, you know, it's like 100 runners for every one Nordic skier. Did you notice, was it a huge adjustment for you seeing like everyone kind of seemed to love running, especially where you are in Oregon?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because I went right into the trail scene, and it is a little bit smaller. Oh, yeah. So I felt like it was more of a small knit community. And actually where I live in Bend, there's more, maybe not more, but there's probably equal amount of Nordic skiers as there are runners. It's kind of a unique place. And so I didn't feel like I was all of a sudden in this big, huge sport. And to me, running is huge, but I feel like trail running is almost like its own sport. And so I feel like the people that I know, it's like they're my friends, they're my family. And it does feel pretty small to me still.
Yeah, I could see that. And then, so now you're sponsored by North Face. You have had a lot of success. You won Western States in 2014, lots of course records. But why do you feel it was just because of where you lived that you went down that path rather than, most runners who tend to just stick at the marathon and the shorter distances for a while and then kind of head to the trails? Why was yours kind of different?
Yeah, I think it was partially because I fell in love with running through the trails. And so that was something that I didn't really love running on the roads. And so it never really appealed to me to get into like the more road racing, like marathons, half marathons, that sort of thing. So I did a couple trail half marathons in Bend, and then I did a 50K. And endurance, longer endurance was always a big part of my life as a skier. We spent like 1 to 2, up to 3 hours skiing. So it wasn't really foreign to me to be out there that long. And I kind of like a challenge. Like, to me, it was an adventure. You're going out in the mountains for like a couple hours, and that just sounded so much more appealing. So I think it was a product of just who I am, like my personality, like being drawn to that. And then also in Oregon, we have amazing trails. So it's probably a little of both.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. And it seems like even though, like you said, there's a lot of trail runners in Oregon, and where you are is kind of suited to that. I can kind of see this change happening, that trail and ultra running, both of them are kind of gaining more momentum now, so we may start to see it a bit more like spread worldwide as well as just in the US. But that's, have you seen that, or since you've been in it in 2009, has it kind of stayed the same, obviously other than in Bend?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And I was just talking to someone about this last week. And I definitely think it's growing. There's no doubt about it. And I think part of that is social media. We just know, when I was like in high school, I didn't really know about this ultra running because it wasn't so mainstream. We didn't have ways to follow it like we do now. So I think social media has made more people aware. And for someone who maybe has a personality like me, they're just always seeking kind of the next thing. That's going to be an appealing adventure to them. So I think that is creating more and more people getting into ultra running. But I think to a point, I think there's a big difference between a 50K and a 100 miler. And I think the scene at the 50K is growing. It's pretty feasible. Someone who could run a marathon, you could run a 50K. I mean, it's, I hate to just say like, it's only 4 more miles, because that's a long 4 more miles or 5 more miles, but you can get through it. When you look at the other end of the spectrum, the 100 mile distance, I don't think that's growing quite as much as people think it is. I think the awareness to those that are doing the 100 milers is more prevalent, but I think it's still a really niche group of individuals. It takes a special personality to want to do 100 mile races. So I don't think that's growing quite as much right now.
I would believe that actually. And I have to say, right now, the idea of a 100 miler makes me sick to my stomach. I don't even know how you do it. So kudos to you. Is that your favorite distance?
I'm still trying to figure it all out. I like the whole range for different reasons. The 100 miler is unique in that it just gets you to this place that no other race will get, like under your skin, and it just strips you raw. And I love that feeling of just like being totally just almost destroyed and then just continuing on. It's a really, really cool feeling. So I love that. But if I look at my results, they have like these rankings. I'm the top ranked in the mid distance, they call, which is about 50 miles. So that might be my best. I don't know.
Interesting. And so what do you tell yourself? You said about when you're stripped raw kind of in that way, what is going through your mind when you are you know, in that, I can't even imagine like how many times you're saying to yourself, drop out. Like, what are you thinking during that time?
Yeah. The cool thing about it is you're thinking really simple. So instead of having all those voices and distractions in your mind, you're really focused on the present because things are, you know, it's hurting. So you're really right there. So it's, to me, the things that are going through my mind are like one foot in front of the other, keep going, you know, get to this next checkpoint and then you can get some more fuel or something. So it is really basic and I am talking myself through it. I think that's one reason that I've had success. I'm super stubborn. I'm not going to quit unless, you know, I have to. So I will get myself to that finish line. And so I do a lot of positive self-talk. And sometimes I do it out loud. You know, when I'm by myself, I just am like, okay, Stephanie, you're doing great. Like, run as best you can to that tree and then you can take a break or you can walk for a few steps. So it is kind of a conscious, like, pulling myself along. But it is, you know, there's not like all these things going through my head that are distracting me. I'm just really right there.
So then how about from your athletic ability, you also very successful in your professional career, your academics. You have just finished your PhD in nutrition, which is very exciting. And you've published papers on various topics. Do you have any favorites or anything you'd like to share, any findings during this, you know, research time?
Yeah. So the cool thing about what I've studied is it's really been kind of in the same area of the running and the, you know, what I do for my passion as well. So the coolest thing that I've found is looking at the interaction between exercise and nutrition, because they're super important. I mean, you can't really focus on one without the other. And a lot of research and a lot of professionals are either in exercise or they're in nutrition. So there's not a lot of overlap. So I was fortunate to have an advisor who was really into both sides. So my dissertation focused on the impact of exercise intensity on appetite in highly trained women. So it was very applicable to my life. So it's been really fun to learn, you know, the sports nutrition side, but then also to put it into application, because they are very different, what you learn in the textbook versus in real life.
Oh, absolutely. So what did you find then on appetite for active or females?
Yeah, so it's very similar to active males. There isn't a whole lot of research done in a healthy athletic population. Most of the research is done in more of a clinical setting or working with obese or overweight individuals. And so my study was the first that looked at active women. And we found that appetite was suppressed following exercise. And we looked at three appetite hormones that are related to appetite suppression and appetite stimulation. And then we also asked the subjects how they felt. So how hungry do you feel after this, you know, this intensity or this exercise bout? And we tracked them for an hour after their exercise and just looked at, okay, so what happens? And what we found was that appetite is suppressed, both the hormones and subjective appetite. And it's suppressed for about 30 to 40 minutes. And the thing with that is during that 30 to 40 minutes right after exercise, that's the key time window for you to fuel, to cover and to, you know, to optimize your performance. So if you're not hungry, then, you know, we need to think about strategies to recommend for active individuals on how to properly fuel themselves. So it was really cool to like go through this whole study and, you know, see it from this idea I had all the way through completion.
Yeah. And did you find that? So I'm just curious here, did you find that with all intensities? Because I mean, I when I get back from an easy run, I am ravenous. And I mean, thinking about it, hard workouts, maybe not so much, but did you find it was like across the spectrum or it depended on the intensity?
Yeah, so that was our hypothesis, actually, that higher intensity was going to suppress appetite to a greater extent than moderate intensity. And we broke that up into 60% of VO2 max versus 85%. And that just kind of means like an easy run versus like a tempo or a slightly faster than tempo run. We didn't find any statistically significant differences, but we did see trends for subjects to be less hungry after the higher intensity. Part of the limitation of my study was it was fairly invasive. It was hard to get elite female athletes to participate in this if they had training schedules or they had races going on. So we had a N of 15 subjects. Okay. So, you know, in an ideal world, we would have had like 20 or 30 if I had all the time in the world, not these subjects. And we might have saw more differences then. But we saw, you know, the same suppression, statistically speaking, between the two. But I'm with you. After high intensity exercise, I'm not hungry. And yeah. After a long run, if I'm just going at an easy pace, I am starving. So it's very complex.
Yeah, interesting. But thank you for sharing with that. So then let's go a little bit deeper into the rabbit hole here. Looking at nutrition over the years, how has that kind of changed the way you looked at your training and your fueling?
So I've just learned how important it is, and both your day-to-day nutrition and then also fueling during the run. I think I've made the biggest probably progress in my fueling while I'm racing, and that's been really you know, just because I've studied it. I know exactly what I need to do, and it's hard to actually put it into practice, but I've had lots of time to work on this. So I think for me, I saw a big jump in performance when I was able to nail the nutrition. And not to say that it happens every race. You know, things fall apart, especially in 100 milers. There's just so much time for things to go wrong. But more or less, I feel like I have good fueling strategies, and that's been really great for helping my performance. And then also just with training, you know, I know what I need to do before, during, and after to really optimize my results or optimize my training.
So how would you said about, you know, how you could tell, you really see a difference now that you've got it right. How would you feel differently in a race when you had got it right and when you hadn't?
So most people under fuel and they hit the wall. You basically run out of energy. So that was kind of the first thing that I noticed was, oh my gosh, okay, I'm tired, but I can still keep going. And I had this great 50-mile race last year. This Lake Sonoma is the name of the race. And my quads were shot by about halfway through the race. I was just super tired, but I had energy. I was fueling so well. And so it just allowed me to continue on. Even though my body was falling apart and I was tired, I was, you know, getting enough energy at regular intervals that I was able to keep pushing on. And, you know, I've had that before, but that was one race where it was just a great kind of reinforcement to myself that, oh my gosh, this fueling makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that I've noticed is when you don't fuel enough or often enough, you can get GI stomach distress.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And what happens there is when you're running at a, you know, like a race pace or even just out for a long run, most of the blood flow is diverted to your working muscles. And so there's very little going to your stomach for digestion. So if you have big periods of time between fueling, then the blood flow is really not going to the stomach at all. So if you think about that, you know, you eat something and then it just sits in your stomach since there's no ability to digest it. So that can really cause that jostling or that gurgly feeling. Whereas if you fuel more regularly, you maintain some of that blood flow just a little bit to the stomach. So when you do eat, you're able to digest it right away. It doesn't just sit there. So it's called gastric emptying.
Interesting. Well, that's completely, you know, I've had so many people who have said that they felt like their stomach upset was because they had too much, but that kind of, I mean, obviously there is going to be an extreme like that, but so what would you, what have you found is, okay, so let's say for an ultra first, what is the ideal kind of time between fueling that you've found?
Yeah. And it's, you know, for anything marathon up to 50 miler, the ideal fueling is pretty much the same. It's 200 to 300 calories an hour. And so for me, and what I recommend to my clients is to do 3 gels an hour every 20 minutes. And that seems to work pretty well. It takes a while to practice because that's, if you're not used to fueling that much, it's a pretty big volume to get down. And then in the longer races, like a 50 miler, sometimes I'll bump that up to every 15 minutes near the end. And again, it's not black and white. It's not like it works exactly like this, but that's the goal. And then you kind of troubleshoot it along the way to kind of, you know, change for the temperature or how you're feeling or flavor preferences. And the important thing with the fueling is to drink water when you're taking in those three gels. You can overdo it on your gut if you're fueling with, or if you're taking gels and then you're putting sports drink in on top of that, that can just be too much. So looking for 200 to 300 calories. And then in a 100-miler, you just need a little bit more because you're out there for so long and the intensity is slower. So you have more ability to digest real foods. So for that, I think doing more solid, a little bit of fat and protein, I think can be helpful, especially early on. Normally for me, I try to do like some bars or kind of whatever sounds good early on. And then halfway or three quarters of the way through, I switch to gels or sometimes even just liquids, but still trying to get that 200 to 300 calories an hour.
Okay. And that's the same depending on whether you're an elite all the way up to, you know, a 6-7 hour marathoner or, you know, a, I guess, 11-12 hour runner for ultra races.
Yeah. So in the 300 calorie amount, that comes from the amount that your body is able to process when you're running. So we have this maximum that we're able to get across our stomach. And by taking in that much, you're able to get to optimize the amount of energy that you're getting. If you're going slower, you have the ability to digest more, but you don't really need to take in more than 300 calories. So even if you're, you know, just, you're going out for like a, you're running a marathon, but you're just kind of cruising it like nice and easy, I would still not aim for more than that.
Okay. And so I'm just thinking here that like, would it, so your stomach is still able to digest, let's say, let's take a 5-hour marathoner. So they would be able to digest in theory 15 gels, like no problem, as long as they kind of spaced them out and had them with water. Or does your stomach ever kind of reach a point where it's like, okay, I've had enough of these like simple sugars?
Yeah. So it's in theory, yes, it should be able to process that, but you have to practice with them. Okay. You can't just try it for the first time. Your body is not going to know what to do with it. So that's kind of an important part of the training process, is going through and training your gut to know what to do with that carbohydrate. And there's a few ways to do that. One is just making sure that you are training with carbohydrate available. So not training in a fasted state and not doing like the depletion type runs, which really don't benefit you in the long run. So making sure that your body knows what to do with it. And then you kind of have to troubleshoot along the way. So say, you know, that 5-hour marathon runner is taking all these gels and after a while, they can't do sweet anymore. And that happens.
Yeah,
you get palate fatigued. And so I think the important thing is to switch flavors and know what you do, what you can and can't tolerate in a race situation at different temperatures after 5 hours. And that just comes with experience and with practicing during training. Like for me, I know if it's really hot out, I can't do the chocolate gels. I just can't. I have to do like more citrus or strawberry. And I usually save those to the end, to when it's like hard to get them down, and I'll do more of the, I don't know, I call them the heavier gels. To me, they taste heavier. I'll do like more of the mocha and the strawberry chocolate early on, or if it's cooler. So just kind of having that in, you know, information about yourself, because everyone's a little different in what they can do. I think if you can do a salty alternative, like kind of alternate sweet and salty, that can help you from getting palate fatigue too.
Yeah, I think there are a few interesting flavors out. I want to say there's a bacon one out now, and I know there's some other strange ones out. What is your, just out of curiosity, what is your choice of gel?
So I'm a Clif Bar athlete, so I use their products primarily. And the thing that I like about their product line is they have the sweet gels in a variety of flavors. They also have the blocks, so you can mix up like the texture a little bit. And then they also have these savory pouches that are sweet potato and pizza margarita. Hmm. And they are amazing. They're not amazing until you're like 4 hours into a run.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're just kind of like, it's just an interesting flavor. But my first Western States, I got to use them and they just like saved me when I was like, I just couldn't get anything sweet down. So I used those when it got really hot.
That's great. Okay, so let's kind of dive into this a little bit more. You've kind of come out as a role model as being a strong athlete. That is why Lauren recommended you. And you've already mentioned the importance of eating the right foods. But I'm just curious how you stay away from the this running culture that there can sometimes be of needing to look a certain way. How do you kind of stay on the right path with the way that you train and the way that you feel? Is it purely because of what you've learned, or have you kind of seen what it can do for you?
I think it's a couple reasons. I think one, the things that I really enjoy about running are not necessarily performance oriented. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to race and I love to finish well, but when I think about running and what it does for me, it really nourishes me in so many levels that aren't just about the end result. So I love to be out on the trails and just, you know, that's my time to like be present. And I in my day-to-day life, I can be kind of hard on myself. I'm definitely a perfectionist, type A personality. But when I get out running, my mind just churns for a bit, and then all of a sudden it's still. And that to me is why I run. And so I think because those are the reasons, it's kind of helped me to see, you know, that it's helped me to keep a positive relationship with it, and not get so caught up in maybe the negative aspects.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of see it as, you know, the food is the fuel that is helping you to enjoy that experience and make it an enriching experience rather than something that is kind of holding you back from running faster or whatever.
Exactly. And I like to think I have a healthy relationship with food. I definitely think of it, you know, I eat to run and not the other way around. But I also don't think of food just as fuel. I think it's an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
there's nothing more intimate to me than sharing a meal with good friends and family. Mm-hmm. Like I love good food. I love eating, but it's, you know, it's not like something where it becomes an obsessive thing to me. I just think of it as something that nourishes both my body and soul mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah.
And so I think when I think of it like that, it's, you know, it's part of who I am, and it's not just manipulating diet and, you know, that sort of thing for the performance outcome. And I've been fortunate to spend some time in Europe and just kind of see that culture a little bit. And I just love how they're just so normal about how they think about food and just meals. They're important. Whereas we tend to stress about them and think of like, you know, I have to exercise so I can eat. Whereas that kind of creates a negative mindset around food. So I've just tried to really keep it, keep those separate and just have food be something that, you know, I look forward to. And I do, I love to eat.
mm-hmm. No, I'm glad you mentioned that. And actually that I haven't ever really spoken about this, but I have noticed it. And, you know, I'm obviously from England, but I do live in the US. And I do always notice when I go home that my friends and family back there are so much more open to going out for like a meal and not feeling guilty. Yeah, like you said, there's not that guilt. Like we would go for a 3-course meal and, you know, enjoy the whole 2 hours that we're there. And it's a big social event. Whereas here, I feel like it's very easy to kind of be swayed in the wrong direction. So that is great that you brought that up. And I'm sure even more so in some of those other European countries, their culture is going to be even more positive than it would be in England.
Yeah. And I really like what you said about guilt. And I think that's such a great thing to not feel guilt. So I work with a lot of different clients on nutrition. And one thing that I really try to make them see is when you have something that you indulge in, don't feel guilty about it. Like just enjoy that experience. Like, you know, if you're going to eat a bowl of ice cream, enjoy every bite of that. And that, you know, creates a more healthy mindset, but it also just makes you more satisfied. So you're not just like, oh my gosh, that was so bad. I can never have that again. It was like, wow, that was, you know, that was tasty. And then you're not just like having these cravings where it's like, no, I'm not going to eat that. And then all of a sudden you binge. It's just more of a healthy mindset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not agree more. I'm the same way. You know, I've mentioned many times that I have a wicked sweet tooth, and I found for me that if I don't have something sweet each day, I end up overindulging, or not even indulging, overeating other foods because I'm just trying to fill that void. Whereas when I just say, you know, I really like peanut butter M&Ms or whatever it may be, I'm just going to eat my peanut butter M&Ms. I'm going to have a serving, and then at least I'm satisfied and I'm happy. Or, you know, if you, like you said, if you're going out with friends and, you know, you, a friend of yours loves pizza, you go out for a pizza, and, you know, this is a special occasion. So I'm glad, it's nice to hear someone on the same page, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners also agree. But hopefully also, if you aren't kind of seeing that, you can kind of see that this is important to kind of spin your perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, moderation is important too. I mean, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to do whatever I want, my body, eat everything. You know, you have to be conscious about it. But our bodies have all of these internal mechanisms and regulation that drive our appetite, and we override them every single day. You know, the sight and smell of food or just social influences. Most people don't listen to what their body intuitively needs. So when you tune in, it's much easier to do this and just know what you need. So and that's hard to do when you've overridden it for so long, or you just don't even know how to listen to your body anymore. But there is definitely a happy medium, and learning to be intuitive is really helpful to find that balance.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That helps to clear it up. So you said to me before we spoke, you said that you wanted to keep this from a positive angle, which is absolutely fine by me, as I also feel the same way. I like to keep things positive. But why do you think this is important? Why do people tend to dwell on the negative so much? Like, I just wondered if you had any theories on why our culture seems to just hone in on all the negativity rather than, like you said, kind of how in Europe it is very positive and kind of not got that guilt or whatever associated with it.
I'm not sure why we focus on it so much. I think it's really prevalent, so that's a piece of it. And I think, you know, it just goes along with our mindset. And I just say our mindset in general, but just with, you know, we don't necessarily have the healthiest relationship with body image, self-esteem, eating. And so it's kind of just, you know, created not just more prevalence, but also more just discussion about it. And, you know, I think it's really important to discuss it, not just, you know, put it under the table, because it is such a big issue. But I think it's more productive to focus on all of the healthy, strong women who are kicking ass right now, rather than like, oh, you know, did you have like eating issues, or, you know, are you, you know, do you have like any negative things? Like, let's focus on the positive aspects of it, because there are so many great, inspiring women out there who are doing things really well. And, you know, maybe that's not as an interesting of a story to the media, and that's part of the reason we see so many of the more negative focus, but I'm trying to change that.
Oh, no, trust me, I'm with you. I'm definitely with you.
I mean, I just, you know, there's so many people I look up to, and when I think of those people, what I like about them is they're honest. I mean, you know, things aren't always easy. Like, there's ups and downs, but they're just awesome people. They're like women that I want to be friends with.
I could not agree with you more. If anyone listening could see, and I know Stephanie can see it, I have the biggest smile on my face right now. And those of you who have been listening for a while know that what she just said is exactly my thing. But who are your role models? You said about people that embody that those traits and are just kicking ass. Who are some examples for you?
Yeah, I have a few. A lot of them are ultra runners. Yeah. So Megan Arbogast is one person that I've just, since I got into the sport, I always just really looked up to, and partially because she's 54 and awesome. She's getting faster, and she's just an amazing person, and just, you know, is really normal about everything and just got a great perspective on life. So she's been a really great person for me to like aspire to be someday. Like, I want to be again when I'm 50. Another one is Lauren Fleshman, and I know her just through living in Bend. I mean, it's a small town, and so we run into each other, but I just think she's awesome.
Yeah,
she's real, she's down to earth, and she's just like the coolest girl ever. So I definitely look up to her quite a bit. And then Magdalena Bolle.
Yeah.
She is a marathoner turned runner turned awesome friend. Yeah. but she's just like this super fast woman, but just like, just a kind, gentle spirit. And just, I don't know, she's done so much, and she's very humble about it. Mm-hmm. And I definitely look up to how she's kind of bridged the gap from like a professional marathon runner to mother to ultra runner, you know, and kind of balanced it all, like kept a good head on her shoulders through all of it.
Mm-hmm. That's huge, isn't it? I mean, you see that so often where, I mean, I'm sure along the way, somewhere along the way, she did, and maybe Lauren did, and Megan did have these moments where they kind of fell off balance a little bit. But I think it's those kind of strong personalities that are kind of leading the way. They're the kind of people that they may have ups and downs, but they keep, like you said, going on with their honesty and kind of saying, you know what? I am in a crappy position right now, but I'm going to keep going and I'm going to show that this can be done. And they're just kind of being the leaders, which I love to see as well. And I'm very jealous. Yes. They're your friends.
Yeah, she just lives like right up the road.
That's really cool. That's awesome. Okay, so related to strong, powerful role models, you are a big fan of strength training. And I have added this into my regime, my training over the last year or so. And I, like many people, had the fear of, oh, I'm going to get big, I'm going to end up too muscly or whatever. But, you know, I've learned, and I'm sure you're going to talk about it in a minute, that you just get stronger, you don't get bigger. And it, you know, empowers you, makes you feel so much stronger and help, and of course, helps with performance. So what has your experience been with strength training?
Yeah, I think it's really important for injury prevention and just cross training. So doing something different. So I think every runner should do strength training at least once or twice a week, just for that benefit, mm-hmm. just to do something different, use different muscles. Mm-hmm. From the research side of it, strength training can actually improve endurance performance without hypertrophy. So you don't necessarily get bigger muscles and perform better, but you increase these neuromuscular adaptations that allow you to recruit muscle fibers more efficiently. So you use less oxygen to recruit them, less energy, so you can run more efficient. So it translates into performance.
Absolutely.
So that's another reason. And you know, it doesn't have to be you're lifting every single day. You can lift like 1 to 2 days a week, and you're not going to get bigger muscles. Running, I mean, you might get slightly bigger muscles or different body composition, but you're not going to become like a bodybuilder, which is, I think, a big fear of a lot of runners. Mm-hmm. But it complements the running so well. Running is very catabolic, so you're breaking down your body for energy, whereas strength training is really anabolic, so it's stimulating a build back up. So they go together really well. And then the other piece that, and you just brought this up, was the empowerment. And that's so important. Strength training is so empowering to women.
Yeah,
it's besides all the physiological benefits, there's the psychological as well. And it just feels good. When you feel strong, you feel better. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed for myself when I'm good about strength training, which I try to be, I usually do it 1 to 2 times a week all year round. I just feel better in my races. Like even doing upper body strength, you know, you don't really think of like, oh, I use my biceps when I run, but you kind of do. And it's like an all over body thing. And you just feel like you have like a little more, maybe just oomph when you're running.
And power, so, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's so important.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And it's funny, I've kind of gone through the stages with it. And I have a strength coach. I see him twice a week. And yeah, we lift heavy weights and everything. And he always like digs into my shoulders and said, oh, these are really tight. Like you need to loosen this. I'm like, what are you talking about? My shoulders are fine. They're, you know, my legs are the sore part. And he's like, no, like, do you realize this is what's holding you back right now? So, you know, and I've had quite a few compliments on like my arms looking stronger, my back, like, and like you said, you feel strong. You feel like a badass. And
yes,
it's kind of,
yes,
it's just cool.
I love that. And right now with my, I'm just recovering from Achilles surgery.
Yeah.
And so I'm not running at all right now. And I have just been strength training for the most part, adding in a little bit of spinning just this last week. But I was literally going to the gym like 4 or 5 days a week and just lifting. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of into it. Like it was like really
cool. You can
see
how people get into it from running.
Yes. Yeah. How they get into it. And like when I'm running a lot, I kind of just maintain muscle mass. But it was cool to actually build a little bit of muscle. Like I could like see my arms getting bigger and it was cool.
Yeah. No, I agree. And so when you had that surgery, what did that kind of make you did it make you realize anything? I mean, that obviously would have put you out for quite a while, but what did it, yes. Was that your first major injury? What did it kind of make you realize as a runner?
So I've had injuries in the past that have taken me out for quite some time, but I've always been able to cross train through them. And so it was a little bit different. This surgery, like, really just was like nothing. Like, all of a sudden, everything that I loved or that I thought I loved about my day, like being active, it was suddenly gone. So I had to kind of restructure my mind and like think about, okay, so what does your day look like if you can't be active? And that was kind of scary for mm-hmm. me to think through, honestly, because I always had something. So it was not easy, and I would be lying if I said I wasn't pretty down for a while, mm-hmm. but I came out of it. I kind of found out that, like, I'm okay. Like, even if I can't run or even if I can't do something active, I've got all these other things that I enjoy. It's helpful because I'm pretty busy with work, but then also, like, I really love to cook and bake, and so that was, you know, I had more time to do that. I like to paint, so I did a little bit more of that. But I think it was important for me to go through and find out, okay, so if you're not running so much, what do you like? Or like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, what are these other things? And I mean, you never want to say, I'm glad I had an injury, because they're not fun. But looking back, I'm glad I went through this experience. I think it's going to make me stronger. And it's also shown me that, like, okay, I know I love to run. Like, you know, I love to do anything active. That's just who I am. But if that's suddenly not a part of my life anymore, I will be okay.
Mm-hmm. I it's funny you said that. There's so many things I want to like comment about that. But the biggest one to me is you said that, you know, you'd never see injuries as you're glad they happen. But I actually disagree there, that I'm every injury I've ever had. And I have to say, touch wood, I haven't had anything as big as that. But every injury I've ever had, I've been glad it happened, because it, like you said, it teaches you something. You learn who you are. You find, you go through that identity crisis where, like you kind of mentioned, where you like, what am I if I'm not a runner? And it's hard to detach from that, because it becomes part of who you are. And so you have to kind of rediscover that every time. But each time it makes you appreciate each run. It makes you appreciate the endorphin rush that, like you said, you couldn't even get that. So I think that's a huge part of this, and also good for people to hear that, you know, you're someone who's won all these big races, and, you know, I'm an elite runner too, and both of us have been through that, and it's completely normal. And we actually talked about this in a different episode of the podcast with Brad Beer. Which I will put a link to in the show notes. He talked about the emotional attachment with running injuries is actually worse than the physical, because we almost feel embarrassed to be down about our running, because, well, it's just running, but then it isn't just running. So,
There's so much more to it.
Yeah, it's tough. But I really like that you said that you took the time to kind of figure out some other things. And obviously you are a woman of many, many talents, as you said, you like painting, and I knew about the cooking, which I was going to ask you about. But I think that is a big thing to maybe try if you are kind of in that stage right now, to sit down, write down all the activities you like. I mean, I've done that before, and even down to, I remember writing on mine, eating cereal, because I really enjoy eating a bowl of cereal. Like, all the tiny little things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like writing to a friend, receiving a letter from a friend, like paying it forward, or whatever it may be. So yeah. I think that was a huge thing you mentioned there, and will be really helpful to anyone who is going through that right now.
And another thing, and you mentioned writing things down, and I really like that, and doing, I had to do this a few times, like write down things that are good in my life.
Yes, so absolutely.
I call it the glad game. So I just, you know, it can be something simple, like I'm glad I have 2 feet and I can walk around, even though one of them's injured, or I'm glad I have a dog who loves me, mm-hmm. you know, just like something really simple to just kind of bring it back to perspective. Like, wow, okay, you know, I have a lot of great things still. It's not, you know, this injury, it's, you know, putting this cloud over my head, but it's not the only thing.
Definitely. Definitely. I did exactly the same thing. And I would write journal each day and do a thing of the, I'm glad, even if it's as silly as that man held a door open for me, or, you know, I made it down the stairs without X hurting, or whatever it may be. And then I would write about how I was feeling, and allow the inner voice to come out, because no one was going to see it, just to kind of get it out on paper. So that's great that you have the same thing.
Yeah.
And you did write a blog post about listening to your body, and you're still trying to kind of work out what that means, especially as a runner who, well, in your 100-mile races particularly, but any of the races, I guess, you have to push through that pain. Will you kind of share with the listeners what you came up with based on listening to your body at the end of that blog post?
Yeah, so that was an interesting thought process, because all of my recovery has been like, you know, from my PT to my surgeon, just like, listen to your body, you know, only do what you're ready for. And that was a really hard concept for me to wrap my head around, because I don't listen to my body. If I did, you know, there's so many things I wouldn't do. Like in a 100-mile race, my body is telling me to stop.
you think.
Yeah. So I override that all the time. But what I think it really meant was like really listening to, you know, progressing and like trying little bits of activity, and then monitoring, just without reacting, how I feel the next 24 to 48 hours. So for example, when I got to bike for the first time, which was really exciting, mm-hmm. I did, I think, 15 minutes. And it felt great at the time, but then I had to wait and just see, okay, so how is this going to affect me in the next day or two? And it definitely got a little bit sore, like 24 hours later. So I was like, okay, so I have to listen to that. And maybe, you know, I'm not going to increase the amount that I bike. Maybe I try 10 minutes and see what that does. So it's been a lot of trial and error, and I'm definitely in the thick of that right now, like adding in new activities and seeing how does that affect me in the next day or two. This weekend, I got to go for a little walk with my dog. Yay. And it was so great. It was sunny. It was beautiful. Had no pain. We walked for 3 miles on the trail, and then it started to hurt on Monday. So 24 hours later, it was a little sore. So I was like, okay, so that was probably too much. So the next walk that I try, maybe I'll just go for a mile. So mm-hmm. it's really just like checking in and being totally honest with myself mm-hmm. at how I'm doing, rather than just overriding it and just like kind of putting my head down and just plowing through. Because mm-hmm. as runners, that's what you do a lot. Or as any yeah. athlete, you know, you have to push that limit. You have to try things. So it's been kind of a readjustment for me to really listen to my body.
Yeah, and actually, yeah, definitely learn what that means. So then how mm-hmm. do you not get disheartened when something like that does happen, when you get that little setback? Have you come across any little tricks that allow you to keep it in perspective?
I think one is looking at or thinking of the big picture. So I still have goals this year and I want to get there. And so it's helpful for me to not focus on right now, like this hurts right now, I can't do this, rather than like focus on, okay, in like 4 months, here's where I want to be. And so these are steps that are getting me there. And then also just having like being okay or being appreciative to do any activity. So now it feels like, even though it's like 20 minutes, which is like nothing compared to what I used to do, it's better than it was. And so mm-hmm. I'm more or less okay with where I'm at. Like I'm just so thankful that I can do something. Get out of the house every day, get a little sweat going. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, when I do get in those spaces where I'm like getting down, I think like, okay, be thankful you can do something and think of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Good. And I'm sure that makes you kind of appreciate each, you know, that 20 minutes or even just the walk. You would never have probably appreciated a walk with your dog before, or it just kind of makes you grateful for every little step along your journey. So
yeah,
thank you for putting that in a good perspective. That really helps. So the only other thing I was going to ask you about, which we're kind of running out of time here, but you have recipes on your blog, which I will encourage listeners to go check out. And you have I think it was a chai ice cream on there, which is on my next thing to make, because I love chai things. So that sounds really good. And it was good for me to see that you do have recipes on there. As we kind of already talked about, you have healthy recipes on there, but you kind of are breaking that illusion that elites eat healthy 100% of the time. I will put links to your recipes on the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC106. But is there anything you would like to say just to kind of close about, you know, your diet overall, or like just any final words on nutrition for runners?
Yeah, I think like diet, the less you think about it, almost the better. If you can just have an uncomplicated relationship with food, eat things that you enjoy, eat things that nourish your body, I think that's the best way to think about it. And with the recipes that I create, I try not to say the word healthy too much because that conjures up these ideas that like some recipes or some foods are unhealthy. And what I like to do is create recipes that are very nourishing. So they have nutrients in them that are going to support your body, whether you're, you know, just an active average individual or if you're an elite athlete. We all need vitamins, minerals, fiber. And I like to create recipes that are just chock full of those. So you're not just getting the energy and the taste enjoyment, you're also getting all of these great things for your body.
Definitely. Okay, that's fantastic. And this has been really insightful and just joyful for me to kind of talk to you and hear that we're on the same page for so many things here. Depending on where you are in the world, summer or winter is coming. We only have a few precious weeks of this ideal running weather before the mental battles begin. Music or podcasts can make those long training days much easier, and I love to listen to 90s music to get me through the really tough parts. Jabra Pulse is the wireless sports earbud that was designed with runners in mind. Yes, that means no slipping out of your ear on those hot summer days, especially with the customizable in-ear pieces. It even has an accurate in-ear heart rate monitor, so you can use that to make sure those easy days stay easy. Yeah, just like you promised. I love mine, and I've run with musical podcasts more in these past few months than I have in the rest of my life combined. That is how great these are. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. So we just got the final kick questions. So firstly, what is the greatest advice you've ever received?
Don't take yourself too seriously.
Love that.
Don't put all of your eggs in one basket. Just keep a balance in life.
Mm-hmm. And you've definitely been showing that through what you've talked about. So that's great.
I try to.
You have. What is your favorite running book or blog other than your own?
I really just like to follow Lauren Fleshman. I know I already talked about her, but
she's awesome.
Just because she's, you know, I see her as this mentor in the sport, but also as a friend and just a cool girl. So I love following her.
Yeah, definitely. She's definitely someone I've always kind of admired and looked up to. So can see why you'd say that. What would you like to tell a brand new runner?
Get into it slowly. Listen to your body. But yeah, it's, you know, with the social media, it's easy to just kind of start to follow what someone else is doing, but you really need to do what you're ready for and just like think big picture. Don't sign up for your first 50K and 50 mile and 100 mile in the same year. Like get into it slowly and enjoy the process.
And don't compare against, like related to that, don't compare when, if you are starting to run and you see other people doing this or that, don't feel like, oh, I have to be there. Like, I think that's something we often get tangled up in is comparing ourselves to what other people are doing.
Right. Yeah. Don't compare.
Favorite pre-race meal?
So that's interesting. The reason that I choose my pre-race meal is because it doesn't have a lot of fiber or vegetables in it. So I will tell you what it is, but this is not my normal go-to meal. normally I eat things with a little more colorful and vegetables in them, but I like white rice, eggs, and avocado. It sits well. I can get a lot of it in and it doesn't create any GI issues the next morning. So I wouldn't say it's super enjoyable, like tasteful, but the performance benefits are important to me.
Well, I'd like to find someone who could find their like meal they eat before a race that they actually like, oh, this is so good. Cause I don't know about you, but I very rarely find a meal I eat just before running that I'm like, oh, I love that.
I should say my breakfast, my morning of the race, I eat an ocean roll, which I love. It's
what
a croissant. It's a mix of a croissant with some cardamom and cinnamon and sugar. It's like just delicious. It's like a croissant, but way better. And I can't say I enjoy actually eating it before a race because I'm super nervous, but it does taste good.
That does sound good. And I love croissants, so I'd be I'd be all about that.
Well, you have to come visit Bend. I'll take you.
Oh, no, that's on my list. Trust me. I'm going to be out there as soon as I possibly can. Cool. Okay, finally, your favorite running product?
You know, I was thinking about this, and I just, probably my pack, my hydration pack, because I just love to go out and like be out for hours, and I'll bring like a lunch or a change of clothes or, you know, just like put everything that I could ever need in that pack. And then I'm set for the day. So I use the Nathan Aris pack, which is also, it's a pink, really light pack, and you can fit a ton of stuff in there.
Do you get all your gels in there? Those little bees sloshing around.
All my gels and gels. You never know. I my husband and I go on adventures where it's like they turn into like 8-hour ordeals.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've learned, and I pack like stuff that I could spend the night if I had
to. Oh, really? So, okay.
Yeah,
that's good.
It keeps me from, you know, getting into trouble.
Makes sense. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed this, and I'm sure our listeners have too. What is the best way you would like people to follow you? Or find you, I guess.
So I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, Stephanie Marie Howe. And I think on Facebook, it's Stephanie Howe Violet. And then I have a website as well, stephaniemariehowe.blogspot.com.
Yeah, okay. I will put links to those in the show notes. I just wasn't sure if you wanted the Blogspot one or your coaching website. So
yeah, either one.
Okay, I'll put links to both of those. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun to talk.
Episodes like that often make me wonder what it would have been like if I'd pursued a science-based degree, because then I could have seen what I would have discovered about the running world that I could share with others. But then I think that actually I kind of like just bringing people like Stephanie on the show to learn what they have found without actually doing all those years of hard work. And if I'd gone that route, I actually wouldn't be here right now, so probably best that I didn't. So remember, you can enter to be one of 10 winners of either a kettlebell, stretching, or foam rolling program that we are doing as a giveaway for our 100th episode. There will be a link in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/106. Next week, I'll be talking to the one and only Bob Larson. For those of you who don't know who he is Meb's coach, and he's going to let us in on a few of the secrets that make Meb so great. I'm very excited, and you should be too. So until then, have a great week.